begin with a really wonderful, wonderful poem from the Theragata, the Free Nuns Collection, Nuns in the Buddhist Time. And this is, this particular poem is really Maddie Weingast's interpretation of some of the poems from that time. But it's quite wonderful. It's called Friend. Full of trust, you left home and soon learned to walk the path, making yourself a friend to everyone and making everyone a friend. When the whole world is your friend, fear will find no place to call home. And when you make the mind your friend, you'll know what trust really means. Listen, I have followed this path of friendship to its end, and I can say with absolute certainty, it will lead you home. It will lead you home. This has everything to do with the time period that we're in. Finding peace within ourselves. Finding friendship within ourselves. Discovering compassion. Discovering joy. Discovering an inner balance of being as we move through the ups and downs. These four qualities, the Brahmaviharas, which I know many of you are at least familiar with, but as we know, it's not a matter of just knowing about them. It has everything to do with living. It has everything to do with embodying. I find the words Brahmavihara inspiring unto themselves. You know, this word Brahma, meaning divine or transcendent or dignified or noble. You know, Brahma, godlike, if that makes sense to you, universal. And then this word Vihara is even better. Home, abode, divine abodes. Where we can find ourselves at home. And where we can also offer ourselves as a home for one another. The Brahmaviharas allow both. They allow us to find refuge within ourselves. And as well, they are a direction, a path. They offer an approach. They offer almost a view, a way to plan our day instead of planning our day around what we can get or not get, which is pretty much our conditioning. The Brahmaviharas allow us to plan our day in a different way, for our intention to be one of friendship, one of kindness, even when it's really hard, for our intention to be to care, even when it seems like we're too exhausted, too tired to care, to be joyful when joy may seem to be superficial or not enough, for our intention to be one of sustaining a kind of equanimity or inner balance, come what may. So it offers us a direction, a path for the day, the recognition of our usual conditioning, and then setting our course in a way that is bound to bring what our hearts desire. We don't always in the moment think this is what our hearts desire, but they do. When we find this out, we rediscover this again and again. These divine abodes, divine homes, places that we can actually set up a home in, we can camp out in, rather than simply visiting from time to time, that's where our practice comes in. And if we just take them on as idealistic, then we will visit from time to time, but they won't be truly there for us when we need them. So we practice the Brahmaviharas. They are timeless. The Buddha spoke about them 2,600 years ago. You know, they're timeless. And at the same time, right now, in this period, in this time of contraction and uneasiness and uncertainty, anxiety, fear, outrage, we need them even more. I don't see how we can do without them. But again, we need to really take them on with dedication, with the lightness of being and with everything we've got, without grimness and with a sense of seriousness about it as well. So when we look at the first, when we look at metta, friendship, to go back to this poem, and when you make the mind your friend, you'll know what trust really means. Of course, we begin with making all experiences something that we can accommodate or allow or make space for, make room for. It's an intention. It's an intention, and oftentimes it's an action coming out of that intention. An action from the Buddha's point of view meant action of body, speech, and mind. So it might, to have an intention of kindness, it might lead to a physical action. It might lead to some way of communicating with friends or with family. It might lead to our thinking being different because of being infused with metta, with loving kindness. So whatever experience is present for us, whatever experience is arising, that's what we want to relate to with metta, with kindness, to be a friend to this mind. And then we extend, because all of these qualities of heart are both boundless as well as unconditioned. And we send them inwardly, outwardly. This is what our intentionality is directed towards, outwardly and inwardly, and unconditional. So that means whatever object might be and objectless, not always having to have an object. Of course, one of the most wonderful ways to encourage more kindness, more metta, more warmth, particularly at times when we're feeling kind of numb or cold or disconnected or out of touch, one of the best ways to warm the heart is with the practice of gratitude. In Cambridge, we have this thing going, and maybe you do too, in Seattle. We have this thing going where everybody's got a gratitude friend. And what this means, and some people have gratitude groups, but what this means is, in the easiest way possible, maybe a text with a word or two being texted once a day, maybe an email, maybe something more than that, but really something extremely simple. With your gratitude friend, you exchange what you are grateful for each day. So you receive something from your friend, and then you send something back to your gratitude friend. You might not even like this person, you know? You might not feel a sense of connection or mesh a personality with this person, but you're gratitude friends anyway. And it's a way that practitioners can really help one another So I passed this on because it works so well in Cambridge. And you can ask anyone, because it doesn't have to do with a big relationship. It doesn't have to do with getting together or Zooming together or anything like that. It's just helping one another as practitioners. Just sending gratitude back and forth. And something modest, I think, is always really good. Not, I'm grateful because somebody did the right thing today. I mean, that's good, that's good. But more, something quite modest, like I'm grateful that there's this breath happening right now and it's unimpeded. Or I'm grateful that it didn't snow that long today. It snowed here in Massachusetts this morning, or yesterday morning. It was really a pretty big snowstorm. But it didn't last all that long, and I don't think it really harmed the flowers. They looked really beautiful after the snow melted. But something modest and not grandiose. And something that doesn't have to do with grasping, like whatever I'm grateful for should last forever, or I'm secretly hoping that it will last forever, where you're grasping after it. But just let it be, let it float, let it be in the moment. Just present. It is this way right now. And there is gratitude because it is this way right now. So it's a really wonderful way when you feel really far away from metta to actually bring gratitude in as a discipline. Metta is a way of transforming how we actually see. And when I say see, I mean perceive. It affects how we perceive. We begin to see with less fear. We begin to see with greater gratitude. We begin to see with more kindness towards ourselves and towards others. And of course, we take on the difficult as well in our field of loving kindness. Metta going in all directions. Ourselves, our images of ourselves, our thoughts, emotions, and extending out in ever greater circles, free from attachment as best we're able. Compassion has to do with listening deeply. Listening to the cries of the world, listening to the sorrows, listening to the fears, listening though with a sense of self-trust and confidence. Compassion doesn't have to do with being overwhelmed and crushed by the immensity of suffering and sorrow in this world, or by our own sorrows everywhere, our own sorrows either. Compassion is something that has a sense of capability in it. I think of, and I know that some of you are in the healthcare field and maybe going out every day and helping others. And that sense, or as a parent, that sense of just simply knowing what to do, doing what needs to be done without a fuss, having a sense of confidence in what you're doing. That's really what compassion is. It's not being crushed by. It's not being overwhelmed by. It's caring. It's not getting caught up in anger or fear or grief or pity. It's caring. And the compassion phrase is, may I care for this pain? Meaning, physical pain, may I care for this sorrow. Looking at the ways we try to control, our efforts to control, which is the opposite of compassion, and we see this being manifested and expressed in this world. We don't want to fall into that. We want to see the ways that we are trying, fruitlessly actually, of course, to control. And to shift out of this sense of control into compassion, this capacity to care, this depth of listening. We're really modeling ourselves after Avalokiteshvara, the manifestation of compassion. I have, right behind me, I have this calendar, and it's Bodhisattva. I don't know if you can see it, but it's a Bodhisattva. And it has many arms. I don't know how many arms. I have to count. It's either 4 or 5 or 6 arms. I'll know by tomorrow morning. I'll let you know tomorrow morning. It has a lot of arms, and it has so many arms because this is our capacity to care, to take care of our own dear hearts, to care for ourselves, and to care for others in a way that it is not overwhelming, that does not crush, but does offer this sense of strength, enlarging our capacity to care without drowning. This is where the practice comes in. Joy, mudita, it can seem like joy right now. How can we be joyful when people are so sorrowful and having such a tremendously difficult time? How is it possible to feel joy? Isn't it laughing at others when they are in pain? Actually, the Buddha encouraged joy in every moment. Actually, joy is inevitable if we practice this path. We can't get away with it. We can't push it down. We can't say, okay, I'm all right with the other Brahma Viharas, with metta and with compassion and with equanimity. They all sound dignified enough for me, but forget the joy. It doesn't work like that. When we practice, there's a joy that bubbles up from beneath. It's actually a constant stream of inner strength. We can't avoid it. We can't force it back down. We can't make it go anywhere. And we realize that the sage, the wise person, actually is nourished by joy. The wise person feeds on joy. The sage feeds on joy. And I don't know about you, but every awake person or somewhat awakened person that I have met in my life, and I've been privileged to meet many, there is always the vibration of joy surrounding them. You can always feel it from them, that there's this liveliness, this inner sense of joy. And I have to say that in my engagement with teachers, I don't trust anyone who doesn't have this vibration, this field of joy inwardly and surrounding them. There's something that I think they don't really know yet. So I just pass that on to you from my own experience. It's not denial of reality. We cannot afford to deny reality. It is not putting our heads in the sand or pretending that things aren't so. It's joy in the midst of. It is necessary joy. We are called to gladden the heart. It is essential. And we find it within. We cannot depend upon, and maybe we know this a lot more than we may have a few weeks ago, we cannot depend upon conditions being a certain way or being the way we want them to be. We don't know what is going to happen. This is a profoundly uncertain time, and always life has been uncertain. From a personal point of view, every person's individual life has always been uncertain. It's just really vivid right now. It's really clear right now. In the middle of it, we look within the heart for joy, and we express that joy. We are not afraid to gladden our hearts. We also take note of upekkha, of equanimity, of inwardly balancing ourselves in the midst of the ups and downs, in the midst of the storms, in the midst of the uncertainty, in the midst of the pain, in the midst of the anxieties, in the midst of the worldly winds of praise and blame and gain and loss, etc., etc. The Buddha said to sit like a great tree in the midst of them all. And I don't know about a great tree, you know, that seems a little bit too much, a little bit daunting to sit like a great tree. I don't think that that's really all that important. We may not feel like a tree at all. We might feel like a little branch that's about to break off. So forget the tree part. In the midst of it all is the key to this passage. In the midst of it all. And this is where equanimity comes in. It means encouraging spaciousness, remembering a greater field of awareness, a greater field of room, a greater field of spaciousness in the midst of whatever may be occurring. So there is what is, and we don't deny it. And at the same time, equanimity is teaching us to respond differently. Instead of being gripped by our reactions, we are learning how to respond, perhaps by remembering in the midst of whatever way that things may be within the ups and downs. There's such a wonderful phrase that has helped me over the years, and perhaps you know these phrases as well. May I rest in not knowing, may I rest in calm. In times of uncertainty, these two phrases are quite helpful. And it doesn't mean that we don't know anything, and it doesn't mean that we don't care. It doesn't mean that we are pretending that things are a certain way, and we're not supposed to have knowledge, and we're not supposed to see, causes and effects and all of that. Well, it's not ignorance by any means. We need all the discernment that we have. But it does mean that when we are confused and really aware of uncertainty and caught by that uncertainty, we can rest in the middle of the uncertainty. We can find a place of ease in the very middle of the uncertainty. So we're resting in that which we probably want to push away or wish were not happening, but we're actually turning towards, may I rest in not knowing, may I rest in calm. So I offer you these phrases if they're helpful for you in terms of encouraging an inner balance of being, an inner balance within your heart.